This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're talking to Jim LaValle, who is author of Your Blood Never Lies, and his bestseller is Cracking the Metabolic Code. Both are available at Amazon.com. Jim, why do you think people should have regular blood work? You know, there's really some controversy about that, because much of the blood work that we do is kind of like routine. So many patients come in to tell me that their blood work is completely normal, but they feel horrible. And so are we missing the boat? Are we expending money in the wrong direction with the so-called routine physical, where we do a SMAC and a CBC and, you know, looking at cholesterol and, you know, it's a shave and haircut, two bits, and you're done.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, there's a big problem in the way we perceive blood tests. You know, we're thinking that blood tests, all we're doing is waiting to see if we can find that you have cancer or an autoimmune disorder or maybe you have diabetes. Instead, we should be looking at our blood going, well, what are you moving towards? Where are you trending? That was the reason I wrote Your Blood Never Lies, is to try to educate people on, and I wrote a computer program to do it as well for doctors to use. It's to really start to understand trend analysis, meaning that where are you going? You don't develop diabetes overnight. You don't develop heart disease overnight. You don't develop cancer overnight. And you don't develop irritable bowel or any of the other issues that are out there today overnight. There's issues that show up that are trending in your body long before you get, you know, labeled with a disease. And more importantly, what you need to find out is that it's the relationship between the labs. So it's one thing if somebody has a 95 blood sugar, which confers a 60% risk of being diabetic in the next decade, even though they're in the normal range, I think people want to know that they have a 2 out of 3 chance of being a person with diabetes, which means they're more at risk for heart disease, cancer, and more at risk for kidney failure and blindness and amputation. So why wouldn't I want to know that risk?
Not to mention dementia, Alzheimer's,
right.
Highly correlated to abnormal blood sugar. Yeah,
absolutely. But then if I have a 95 blood sugar and my homocysteine is 13, which is a marker for damage to your kidneys and damage to your arteries and damage to your brain, and your kidneys aren't filtering well and your blood pressure is high and you know, your lipids, you're making really small LDL particles and you're oxidizing them. Now I've just stacked up 6 things about your prediabetes that all start to correlate and create a problem. So you're chaining together this information and saying, oh, that's why I'm looking at all these trends. None of the readings have to be out of bounds, but you could have several that are trending high or low that are adding up to this beautiful mosaic of someone either being healthy or a mosaic that's saying they're going to develop a disease. The risk is going to be there for them to develop a really intense condition or disease in the next decade of their life. So that's why I think blood tests are really important for people to keep on top of, so they understand where are you today, and more importantly, given where you're at today, where are you in the next 10 years?
If you could pick 5, which are the most important ones to ask for when you're getting that so-called routine physical, the ones that are most predictive and that perhaps sometimes aren't routinely ordered?
Well, I mean, this is always ordered, but I really like glucose and insulin.
Insulin's not routinely ordered.
Insulin's not that common, I know. Yeah. So that's why I mentioned it, just to kind of give you something a little different there. But a glucose and insulin, I think, is really important. I'll tell you, one of my favorites is red blood cell magnesium. Oh, and nobody orders a red blood cell magnesium.
Exactly.
And because red blood cell magnesium, I mean, you know, magnesium content, it's most predictive for metabolic syndrome. It's predictive for future heart disease risk. It's predicted for blood pressure issues. It's predictive for obesity. You know, that's the reason I like that one. And also, when I give people magnesium, when I find out their RBC mag is low, it's the big thing that they feel better on. When I get their magnesium pull up, they have energy, their legs don't feel heavy, they're not cramping anymore, they sleep better, their anxiety is less. So mag's a real big one. I really like an LDL particle number. So looking at your cholesterol and finding out, you know, how small your particles are, because it's probably the most predictive thing for heart disease. And because then
someone with an LDL of 160, which is considered high, well, you know, two people, one person might be with the same LDL might be at much higher risk of cardiovascular disease than the other person, merely because the particles are larger and more benign. So you want to not just count the particles, you want to qualitate the particles, characterize them.
Absolutely. You know, the smaller they are, the better chance they've got of getting into endothelium and triggering an immune response where you start to plaque. Mm-hmm. I like a cortisol. I mean, there's a lot of data on even a morning serum cortisol. Now, ideally, I would love a 4-point salivary cortisol or a 5-point urinary cortisol, but even a morning serum cortisol has got a lot of data. And I think because people are, you know, so stressed out today that they don't realize that those stress hormones can be coursing through their body and really creating havoc for their nervous system, their immune system, cancer risk. And so cortisol, a morning cortisol, is important. And then another one that a lot of people don't hear about, and I think you're going to find out it's going to be really important, and I know you know this, Dr. Hoffman, is adiponectin. I think it's the next hot mark.
Yep.
And not just because adiponectin, when your adiponectin levels are low in your blood, it means your insulin receptors aren't working very well. Mm-hmm. And when your insulin receptors don't work well, you're going to release more adrenaline, your blood vessels are going to get tighter, your blood pressure is going to go up. But it's a big marker for oxidative stress. Now, it shows you, and when your adiponectin levels are low, between that and another marker called GGT, gamma glutamyl transferase, those two markers will tell you an unbelievable amount about the rate of oxidation going in your body. And for the listeners, you can think of the rate of oxidation as the rate of rusting in your body. You know, see your rusty bumper? It's because it got oxidized. You see rust on a railing? It's because it got oxidized. When you oxidize and you rust, your cells get damaged, and that leads to a lot of problems for your health as you're aging.
Jim, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about some of the newer formulations from the folks who made Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. There are some combination formulas which are interesting. The latest one they're putting a lot of emphasis behind is Kyolic Curcumin.
Oh, yeah.
So why do you think those two are a good mix?
Well, first of all, the curcumin that's used is a phytosome curcumin, and it's in clinical doses. So you're getting a curcumin is a tough molecule to absorb. So people say, oh, put it in olive oil, put it in fat, mix it with something when you eat it, you know, so otherwise, because it doesn't absorb. It's called a class 4 botanical. So the type of curcumin that's used is made by a company called Indina, which is an Italian pharmaceutical company that basically wraps the curcumin in a lipid. So it wraps it in it, so when you take it, your body can absorb it. So why is that important? Well, curcumin has these tremendous effects on inhibiting the inflammatory response. So you have this master regulator called NF-kappa-B, and NF-kappa-B is like a master switch to turn on all these other inflammatory compounds that your cell can make. And when you take curcumin and it's lipid-soluble, it penetrates the cell and helps to tell your body not to turn that on, so that you're getting an anti-inflammatory response, which is, you know, everybody hears heart disease is an inflammatory process. So you're getting an anti-inflammatory response, and then you add chiolic aged garlic with it, and now you're getting all the benefits of reduced oxidation of your lipids, the blood vessels are more pliable. And remember, the number one most inflammatory thing that causes your blood vessels to get damaged, it's postprandial hyperglycemia. So as your glucose goes up,
it's like the sugar molecules in your bloodstream attack your blood vessels, literally.
And you literally get this inflammatory response. So having curcumin on board helps to dampen the inflammatory response. Now, I'm not saying that means you get to go out and eat all the sugar you want, or even go and drink all the fruit smoothies that everybody's drinking right now today, which is insane, the amount of fructose that people are taking it's healthy. But I can tell you one thing. If you take aged garlic extract, you take curcumin, you're at least going to limit those damaging effects if you choose to drink those kind of fruit smoothies that are loaded with fructose.
Jim, we're going to pause for a second to allow one of our sponsors to share a message with us. So stay with us for a few seconds.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Okay, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine available to you as a free resource. So continuing on the theme of some of the specialized products, you know, personally, I take I think it's Formula 100. That's the cardiovascular formula.
That's the one I take. Right. I love that formula.
Which is sort of it's sort of like the plain Jane, ultra potent, chiolic, unadorned, you know, with nothing else in it. And, you know, because I take so many other supplements and I do take curcumin as a separate supplement, I don't take that combination formula. But for people who are trying to minimize the number of things they take, the combination formulas are great. So there's another one that's intriguing. They have many different flavors. You know, it's like a lot of different 31 flavors. But one that I think is particularly intriguing is the blood sugar balance. What's in it? Because everybody has a different idea of what supplements aid in blood sugar balance. Of course, there's the aged garlic extract along with what?
Well, there's chromium is in it. So you got 100 mics of chromium, which is good. I mean, honestly, with chromium, the longer you take chromium, the better it'll build up in your body and you'll get the adequate amount. So you get chromium in it. And then you have salicylic bark, which is a little bit different than what you've seen in other blood sugar formulas.
Yeah, that's a little novel. That's novel because a lot of people use, you know, Gymnema and use other types of things, you know.
Yeah, and then bitter melon, which a lot of folks have used. Bitter melon is a standardized extract. Bitter melon acts as an insulin mimetic, right? It's going to help improve insulin receptor signaling, and therefore what happens – here's a big thing why I like this, because they've kind of shown this it works with aged garlic as well, is that you improve the GLUT4 transport. So you know your body brings in glucose different ways into each cell. GLUT4 is the way that you bring it into your cell – and you burn that glucose and you get 38 molecules of energy, right? 38 packets of ATP for every time you push across some glucose. When you don't get the signal to open up the GLUT4 door, it's kind of like, you know, let's make a deal with Monty Hall, if you remember that, right? You get door one, door two, door three. Well, door one, GLUT4, makes a lot of energy. When you get less efficient and your insulin receptor gets sluggish, and inflammation is causing your insulin receptor not to fire the way it should, you open up something called GLUT1, which of course is what Otto Warburg, when he won a Nobel Prize, found out is the way of cancer. It's what happens when you passively diffuse glucose into your cell, because it can't get it through its normal way, but you end up only making two molecules of energy and a lot of waste. So you make a lot of lactic acid. Now my muscles get sore, I get intracellular acidity, and I'm not making energy. So when you take aged garlic and you take bitter melon and you take this combination product that's got the Salacia in it and some chromium in it, you're trying to push the body back into that GLUT4 transport so that you make more energy and make less waste product, and you become less intracellularly acidic. So it's kind of an interesting combination of a formulation.
So in the remaining few minutes, this is the lightning round, Jim, so get ready.
Uh-oh. Holy cow.
This is, I think, a short answer. You know, a sentence or two will do.
I'm ready.
What's your dietary philosophy? I'm kidding. I'm kidding, of course. But, you know, where do you stand in terms of the controversy? Because it seems that, you know, after millions of years of human evolution, you know, I've been reviewing my anthropology. I was an anthropology major in college, and it was fascinating. But that was like 40 years ago. And I've been reading a lot of books on anthropology, trying to ascertain, you know, what is natural? What are we designed, you know, from a genetic standpoint,
right,
to ideally consume? What is the paleo diet? Because a lot of people romanticize the paleo diet. They think, it's sirloin steaks and,
but nobody ate starch. There was no plantain or taro back in paleo times.
Right. But so exactly. So what we're discovering is that it's more complicated than we think, is that ancient peoples did gather root vegetables, wild grains. You know, they were very different than eating a bagel, right? You know, it's a lot easier to eat a bagel than to pound arduously, you know, these things that the women usually gathered, because the men were off on these goofy hunting expeditions, hunting woolly rhinoceri and mammoths. But the women did the bulk of the food collection, and they really got a lot of high fiber, starchy foods. So, what do you think that speaks to in terms of the ideal modern diet?
Well, I don't know anywhere where you can pick ketones off of a tree and eat them. So I'm not a big ketone craze guy. Like, everybody's drinking ketone powders as if that's going to be the secret. Mm-hmm. They're trying to short circuit the way our metabolism was set up to actually function and make energy. I believe that people need to eat starch, and particularly get resistant starch, in order to feed the microbiome and regulate appetite and regulate important compounds like, you know, glucagon-like peptide and ghrelin.
Help us with that term, because resistant starch, you know, suggests something that is not as, like, rapidly released into the system.
Right.
But where do you find it in a modern supermarket?
Well, a green banana. So green bananas, about a third of the starch in a green banana will be resistant starch. And basically it's starch that doesn't break down. Mm-hmm. Your body doesn't use it for energy, but your body uses it in order to feed the microbiome.
Okay.
So the beneficial flora can flourish and make short-chain fatty acids to help repair the mucosal barrier, which is very fragile, one cell layer thick. We need to feed it. And then that means that microbiome and also needs to help signal or send hormonal signaling to the brain for appropriate appetite response. And so what I find in my folks that go, you know, oh, I'm paleo, I never eat starch or grains, I find that their digestive stool analysis is off. They don't have a good microbiome complement. When I have people that go totally ketogenic or doing too much fasting, you know, when they're fasting a lot instead of, you know, what was meant to be, when you looked at a lot of the modified fast or the fasting mimic diet, you know, the modified fasts are, you know, once or twice a week. People do them every day. Now their lipids are up, their glucose are up, and it's because they put their body in this kind of suspended fight or flight. I'm much more oriented at teaching people how to, you know, gather, if they're going to eat plant food, they're going to have some starch. But to what they can tolerate based on how insulin resistant they are because of their previous habits. But everybody needs some resistant starch. You can get resistant starch by heating a potato. You cook a potato and you cool it.
Mm-hmm.
That creates resistant starch. About 20% of that potato will be resistant starch.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll teach people, if you want to eat a potato hot, heat it, cool it, then reheat it again, and the resistant starch stays.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what I often do is, you know, I'll put like, eight baking potatoes in the oven, and I'll have one fresh out of the oven, but then I'll let the rest cool, and then subsequently reheat them, or I may saute them in olive oil, extra virgin olive oil. so that in effect, and I didn't even realize this, but that is a recipe for getting resistant starch into your system.
Yes, it is. And you want to cool them all the way. Like what I do is I teach people is to cool them, put them in a fridge so they really cool down and convert that maximum resistant starch and then pull them out. You can chop them up and saute them with that olive oil, or I'll have them in the morning that way. But you, what you're doing is you make resistant starch from that potato when you do it that way. Yeah, and so it's really important that people understand starch isn't your enemy. Your insulin receptor is becoming inefficient due to lifestyle, stress, environmental pollutants, inadequate micronutrients like magnesium, chromium, zinc, and B vitamins. You know, there's a myriad of things, a lack of sleep, low thyroid output, right? There's a lot of things that cause your insulin receptor to go off, and simply starving yourself of starch or starting to just drink ketones as if that's going to be what corrects your energy inefficiency, it's short-sighted. I'm like you. I was a cultural anthropology guy going through, you know, college, and I love looking at how people ate and what rituals they did. And you know, we you and I both know you can look at people that are literally complete meat eaters and people that were complete vegetarians, and in primitive cultures, both of them had somewhat healthy lives. But a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were very active. And we think being active is working out for a half hour and sitting in front of a computer the rest of the day. That's not being active, right? So you got to move our body, and then the amount of fuel you need starts to work its way out, you know, from there.
I just read a statistic in an anthropology book that I'm reading now that roughly 55% of the food that Neanderthals ate was animal protein. They really subsisted largely on animal protein.
Right.
Do you think that that is a recipe for modern man, or is that going overboard?
I think it's probably going a little bit overboard. But I'm a big believer in protein. But I'm also a big believer in, you know, not being inflammatory. So I think that the two things I find is that I want people to – I teach them to eat all the vegetables they can. Just learn how to eat vegetables. That's number one. The protein and the fat will work itself out. And then we literally – what I went back to doing – I got to tell you, Dr. Hoffman, I went back to teaching people how to count their carbs again, because you know what? People will grab a handful of tortilla chips and then grab three more, and they have
But they
no
come from
idea.
Whole Foods. But they come from Whole Foods. They got to be good. They got to be healthy.
It's a gluten-free, dairy-free cookie. I can eat the whole box.
Exactly.
But I've really had to revert to teaching people fundamentals and how much food they're eating, because here's the difference between us and primitive man. We've got food everywhere. I can stop at a gas station and I can live for 3 years. You know, I mean, there's food everywhere. So people's hedonic urges are more easily triggered, especially if they've got the reward genes activated, right? If they got the D2LE1 gene SNPs, their alcoholism in their family, food feels pretty darn good when you get a little stressed out. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm going to have that little extra plate, or I'm going to have them little extra bag of chips. And so I spend a lot of time teaching quantity of food, and then also, are you really hungry? Are you thirsty? Are you stress eating? Do we need to manage that stress response? Because all of those things, I think, roll into a recipe for trying to manage the way you take care of your health as you age.
Well, that's all very, very important stuff, and it sounds like you're incorporating some genetic insights into evaluating your patients out there at your clinic in California.
Of course.
Yeah, and that's the new horizon. You know, it's maybe not quite ready for prime time in terms of its total predictive value, but you can tell a lot about patients based on, you know, simple saliva sample. You can actually determine, you know, what type of eater they are, whether they're have a very highly addictive predilection,
right,
and so on. So there's something to be said for that. Jim, thank you so much for being our guest today, and we should now all feel empowered to take charge of our health and well-being after listening to you today.
I hope so.
For our listeners who would like to get your book, Your Blood Never Lies, we know it's available for purchase at the usual sources, Amazon.com and the rest of the outlets, right?
That's right. And absolutely.
Let's also remind our listeners where Kyolic aged garlic extract products are available. Go to local health food stores or visit kyolic.com for more information and a store locator. It's a great product, and we're both enthusiasts.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us.
It's great, Dr. Hoffman. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
It's my pleasure as well. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.